Recording in progress. All right, now we're rolling. All right, welcome back. You know what I'm gonna do? I'm gonna do this. 1 second. Okay. We have kind of moving through the story of David and Bathsheba, persona by persona. We've spent some time talking about Uriah and the whole dynamic of Uriah's relationship with David and the decision of David to send him back to the front, but to have him killed. And then we talked a little bit about how that actually came about. What was the mechanism by which, and the battle plans, the strategy by which that all came about? Really, the next major topic in our discussion of the story is David, and a couple of issues related to David's role and to David's perspective and motivation. And then we'll move on to Perek Yud-Bet and to discuss the Navi and Natan and his message to David and all that transpires. But before we do that, there's one unit in the middle that I wanted to spend some time looking at, and that is Yoav. Yoav is a very critical player in the story. His role is much bigger than just this story. Yoav is the general for David throughout Sefer Shmuel. He's been at David's right hand from the very beginning. And for better and for worse, Yoav is a complicated personality. And so I thought it would be appropriate to spend at least one class and talk a little bit about Yoav's role here. He's not the architect of Uriah's death, but he is the one who, the general in charge of carrying it out. So whereas the level of accountability rests primarily on David's shoulders, and we'll talk about that, we cannot ignore Yoav's role in the implementation of it. It's a topic that in of itself, we need to kind of put it into context. Yoav is an individual who's spent his entire life devoted to the service of the Jewish people, devoted to the safety and security and fighting the wars of Israel. And for that in and of itself, Yoav is an extraordinarily important and significant person. In fact, Chazal make this declaration, which I'll share with you on the source page. Chazal say in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Il Malei David lo asa Yoav milchama, v'il Malei Yoav lo asak David de batara. David and Yoav had a partnership that was critically important. Yoav's fighting of the wars enabled David to engage in spiritual leadership of Israel. And David's ability to engage in spiritual leadership of Israel was dependent upon Yoav to fight the military campaigns. And it's based on a pasuk, Vayhi David ose mishpatu tzedaka l'cholamo v'Yoav ben Tzruya l'atzava. David did justice and righteousness for his people, and Yoav was in charge of the army. Explains the Gemara, Ma tam David ose mishpatu tzedaka l'cholamo. What is it that enabled David to do mishpat and tzedakah for his people, mishum de Yoav al tzava, because he knew that Yoav was going to lead the military campaign and maintain the safety and security of Israel. And vice versa, ma tam Yoav al tzava, why is it that Yoav was able to fight the wars? From a spiritual perspective, mishum de David ose mishpat tzedakah l'cholamo, because David was able to raise the spiritual integrity of the leadership of Israel, Mishpat Utzdaka. And essentially the Gemara's praise of Yoav, at least for most of the time that David and Yoav spent together, is such that because Yoav was the warrior who enabled David to be the leader. That is not a small feat and something which we need to remember. At the same time, Yoav has been a personality that David has had to contend with at times, and sometimes not pleasantly. David, has been instances and issues in which David has had a very different moral perspective on how to lead those battles than did Yoav. Most famous amongst them, which we've already discussed, is way back in chapter 3, when Yoav, when in the midst of the civil war between the David and Shevet Yehuda and the descendant and Ishbosheth ben Shaul, when after Shaul's death, when the kingdom was split and there was a civil war and Avner ben Ner was in charge, it was the general for Ishbosheth, and Yoav was the general for David. And at some point or another, Avner decides that he's going to end the civil war and make peace with David. And he comes to David to make peace with him. And David welcomes him and extends a hand of peace to him. And then Yoav shows up. Yoav and his servants, the servants of David and Yoav came from the battlefield. And they heard that Avner had been meeting with David and that David had sent him away in peace. So he comes to David. You had Avner in your grasp, Yoav says to David. Why did you let him go? Don't you know that Avner had only come to deceive you and to spy on you and to see your military weaknesses? Yoav then leaves David's presence and he goes and he calls Avner back under the pretense of trying to make peace with him. And Vayashav Avner Chavon Vayater Yoav Altoch Hashar Ledaber Ito Basheli. Yoav takes Avner aside into the gate to speak with him secretly and quietly, and he stabs him in the back. And he died there to avenge the blood of the brother. There were three brothers, Yoav, Abishai, and Asael. Asael had died in the battle with Avner in the previous chapter. And here Yoav avenges his blood. David is so mortified by the moral offense of having killed Avner, and not only because of the morality of it, but also because he felt that the people of Binyamin and the people of the north, the northern tribes, they'll accuse David of the duplicity and of this accusation. So David has to go out of his way to publicly demonstrate that he had nothing to do with this, and then it was all Yoav, And this was not me. And then in the end, at the very end of the parak, he says, you know today that a prince and a great man, referring to Avner, today fell in Israel. I today am weak. I am just anointed king. I'm young. And these sons of Tzruya, Yoav and his brother Avishai, they're more difficult than I am. They're older than I am. They're more difficult than I am. They're more stubborn than I am. They're hotheads. They're hard to contend with. God will pay them back for their evil. David has a very challenging relationship with Yoav and with all three of his sons. If you remember back to Shmuel Aleph, when David faced the opportunity to kill Shaul when Shaul was hiding in the cave twice, it was one of the brothers, Asael, Abishai, that wanted to go and kill Shaul when they were in the camp and Shaul was sleeping outdoors. And David responded and said, no, we're not going to touch him because he's Mashiach Hashem, he's the anointed of God. It's always these Bnei Tzriya that seem to be the hotheads, if you will. Mali Ben Tzriya, what am I going to do with these Bnei Tzriya? And so it's a complicated relationship. So on the one hand, Yoav is a hero. He's the warrior of Israel. He's the one who's fighting all the battles and putting his life on the line for the sake of the Jewish people. And on the other hand, David is constantly having to kind of pull the reins on Yoav because Yoav is known for going on his own and in defense of the crown of Israel, but nonetheless going out on his own and fighting, sometimes doing things that David doesn't want him to do. He kills Avner later in the story in Perek Chaf, after David, after the rebellion of Avshalom, and David takes the general who had served as Avshalom's general, his name is Amasa ben Yeter, and he appoints him as David's, as Yoav's replacement. So he tries to fire Yoav from this role. Well, that doesn't end well because Yoav kills Asael, and Yoav kills Amasa ben Yeter, and that's the end of that. So Yoav gets reappointed as the general. Complicated relationships. But Yoav is always kind of at arm's length, but at the same time, he is David's general. He's fighting for David and fighting for the Jewish people. So it's a complicated piece. It makes it even more complicated that Tzruya is David's sister, which means that Yoav, Asael, and Avishai are all David's nephews. That just to kind of pull the family connection together. So that just makes it even more complex. So we have in general, the backdrop to this story is the complicated relationship between David and Yoav. But in the meantime, in our particular case, David asks Yoav to do something which is, on the face of it, morally offensive. And Yoav does exactly what David had requested of him, which is to have Uriah killed in the manner in which we discussed. And that raises the question, ultimately, of what is driving Yoav? What's motivating Yoav? And what role does Yoav have in the story? So in order to properly understand this and frame it, what I want to do is actually start with a comparison between the battle. Yoav is a general. Let's look at the perspective, the story from the perspective of a military campaign, from the perspective of the general, namely, and compare Yoav's two major wars or battles that he fights in this story. Meaning, there are two. What's interesting about this perek is that it's a repeat, right? It's the part two of the campaign against Ammon. The whole story starts a chapter earlier, in part one of the campaign against Ammon, and what's worthy of note is to compare the two. Compare the context of the battle against Ammon in chapter 10, and then compare it with Vayila Tshuvat Hashana a year later, when they're back to the same battle against Ammon, Vayatsuru Araba, V'David Yosheb Yerushalayim. So I want to look at these two battles, but from the perspective of Yoav's role. What do we see happening in Yoav's world in Perek Yud, when he's fighting against Ammon, and in Perek Yud Aleph, when he's fighting against Ammon? So for that, we're going to go back briefly to chapter 10 and do a quick review of how this whole story began. It actually begins with Ammon. It begins and ends with Ammon. It begins with the death of the king of Ammon and his son, Hanun, who takes over. First king of Ammon's name is Nahash, his son Hanun, and David decides he's going to pay Hanun a shivakol, if you will, and comfort him for the loss of his father and Nahash, with whom David had had a good and positive relationship. And so he sends a delegation. Unfortunately for David and for Ammon, Hanun is not following in his father's footsteps. Hanun takes the delegation of David's soldiers and publicly shames them, shaves off half their beard, shaves off their garment, cuts off their garments. He literally publicly shames this delegation of soldiers that David had sent to him. And that, for all intents and purposes, that's a declaration of war. And so David sends Yoav, Vayishma David, Vayishlach et Yoav, et kol hatzavah ha-giburim. He sent Yoav and the army of the mighty men. What's the army of the mighty men? It's the core fighting force, the Marines, the special forces. It's the group of soldiers that followed David in that early years when he was running around the country with 400 or 600 men. It's a small group of soldiers that are highly trained and highly professional soldiers, of which Yoav is the head of them. And he sends them to deal with Ammon. But in the meantime, Yetzu b'nei Ammon ve'arachu milchama petach ha'sha'ar, they encounter each other, the children of Ammon, and this army in the entrance of the gate. However, Ammon was not going to be outgunned by Yoav. Ve'aram tzova u'rechov ishtov u'machal levadam basadeh. Ammon called backup. Who was the backup? The backup of all was all the forces of Aram. And if you remember our discussion from last year, we suggested that the forces of Aram that came to assist Ammon, they came around from the south and they encamped, according to the Pasuk in Divrei Hayamim, in Medva. And so here, the green is Yoav attacking the city of Ammon, of Rabbah, and the people of Ammon here in this area. And suddenly the armies, the red armies of Aram, who came not down from the south, the north, but actually came around from the south, and Ammon and Yoav found himself surrounded on two fronts, Ammon to the north and Aram from the south. And that's exactly what the pasuk says. Vayar Yoav geita elav pnei ha-milchama mipanim u'me'achor. Yoav saw that he was facing two fronts, in front of him and behind him. And it placed Yoav in an extraordinarily difficult moment. I'm not going to rehash the whole shiur that we had last year, but based on Psukim in Tehillim, this was probably one of the most precarious moments for the army of Israel. If this battle doesn't go well, if Yoav doesn't extricate himself from this pincer attack and trap, the army of Israel is going to be destroyed. So Yoav took the choice men of Israel and he put them against the armies of Aram. And he took the regular rank and file of the army and he handed them and he gave them over to his brother Avishai. So now I have a war. It's going to be led by two brothers, Yoav and Avishai, both Bnei Tzruya. Yoav is going to lead the smaller Bachurei Yisrael, the choice soldiers of Israel, against the larger forces of Aram. And the rest of the rank and file, the larger army of Israel in the hands of Avishai, they will lead the smaller army of Ammon. So it's a little bit counterintuitive. Yoav's smaller army will fight against the larger army of Aram. And Avishai's larger army will fight against the smaller army of Ammon. That's the strategy of Yoav. I'm much more interested in what happens in the next two psukim. Vayomer, Yoav says to his brother, to Avishai, "Techazak Aram mimeni, if Aram overpowers me, ve'itali lishua, then you will come and assist me and help me, save me. But if, and in vice versa, if Ammon overpowers you, then I will come and save you. And this will be our partnership. We'll, you know, it's the old adage, divide and conquer. And in this case, divide and save. By dividing our forces, we each have a chance to assist the other. Chazak v'nit chazak v'adameinu v'adame elokeinu. Be strong, be courageous for our people, for the cities of God. V'Hashem yaseh atov be'inav. We do whatever we can, and we place our trust in the hands of God who will do what is good in his eyes. That's the battle plan against Ammon in stage one. And in the result, v'yigashu av v'am asher imolim mechama v'aram v'yanusu mipanav, without telling us the details, we learn that Yoav and his small army were able to best the larger, probably less nimble armies of Aram, and they fled. Uvne Ammon ruki nas Aram, when Ammon, which is much smaller, saw that the armies of Aram had fled, so they also fled. And the end result was that Yoav was able to return to Yerushalayim victorious. That gave the people of Aram the opportunity to regroup up there in the north. And Hadadezer from Damascus called together all of his colleagues from Aram Naharaim and from Aleppo and all of Yerushalayim and Shavach, and they all came together. But Yugadla David, David saw that all the forces of Aram were gathering together into one massive attack. Gathers all the armies of Israel, and he crosses the Arden, goes up to the Golan, goes into Damascus, into Syria, and he destroys the armies of Aram. Ultimately, the end result is that David emerges as not just victorious, but the head of a region that is now literally bordered on the Euphrates River. And so this second campaign, which takes place up here in the area of Syria and Turkey, expands the control of David's territory and the kingdom of Israel, literally from the Nile all the way to the Euphrates. It's the largest territory. It's the largest kingdom of Israel in the history of the Jewish people. That's the end result of this campaign. But it all starts with this battle against Ammon. It starts with Ammon's shame of the soldiers of Israel, to which there is a counter campaign against Ammon, which Ammon invites Aram to fight. And then, of course, we have this splinter. All of that, more or less, summary of chapter 10. Okay. Why did I go through all of that? So there's a couple of things that I want us to notice. First and most important, Matovu Umanaim Shevet Achim Gam Yachad. Cannot underestimate the power of the fact that this campaign is led by two brothers, Avishai and Yoav, and the loyalty and the sense of achdus and the sense of unity of purpose and the sense of belief in the mission and the sense of devotion and the sense of spiritual mandate in this campaign is clear. Yoav says to Avishai in one of the most dramatic pre-war speeches that we find in Tanakh, I am there for you, you are there for me. Chazak v'nit chazak v'adameinu v'adarei alokeinu v'Hashem yaseh atov be'inav. Be strong, be courageous for God, for our cities of Israel, and let God do whatever he is good in his eyes. That combined with David's role at the end and the final stage of this campaign as it expands into the north, and we have one of the greatest military accomplishments of Israel. Compare all of that to one chapter later. Vayin l'tshuvat ha-shana l'et tzet ha-malachim v'yishlach David et Yoav et Abadav v'imo v'et kol Yisrael v'yashchitu et bnei Amon v'yatzuru al Rabba v'David yoshev b'Yerushalayim. A year later, David sends Yoav to finally deal with the Ammon, to see, and they besiege Ammon, the city of Rabbah, for many days. David is in Yerushalayim, and we're dealing with the campaign that we have been discussing in this chapter. We'll come to David and his role in sitting in Yerushalayim, but this campaign against Ammon is very different than the previous one. First of all, David is not in the campaign. The text begins with an emphasis on the fact that Yoav is out there fighting the battle. David is in Yerushalayim. David will join the campaign, but only much, much later. Right. Maybe even too late. But more importantly, if the story of the campaign against Ammon is the story of the brotherhood and partnership between Yoav and Avishai in chapter 10, the same battle in chapter 11, the two principal players are Yoav and Uriah. And yet, how different is the relationship between Yoav and Uriah compared to Yoav and Avishai? Simple equation. Chazak, chazak, v'nitchazek b'adameinu v'adarei alokeinu v'Hashem yaseh atov be'inav. In the entire story of chapter 11 and 12, the campaign against Rabbah, the siege, the second battle of the siege, when David says to Yoav, have Uriah lead the battle and be killed. And he sets Uriah up for a trap by attacking the city and then retreating and not giving him backup. And Uriah and his army troop die. And he sends a message to David. And then he threatens David. In the entire story, there isn't one moment where Yoav mentions God's name. Shem Hashem doesn't exist, doesn't appear in this whole episode. Compare it to a battle which begins, Chazak nitchazak v'adamenu v'adarei Elokeinu v'Hashem yaseh atov be'enav, that in itself is extraordinarily telling. And so if this is all about kind of defending the people of Israel for the sake of God, and in a mission and in a battle that everybody believed and everybody understood, everybody saw the value in, when you get to chapter 12, 11 and 12, and you get to the battle for Arba, a year later, after the siege and after Uriah's death and everything else, when Yoav finally says to David, okay, I broke through the wall, now it's time to finish the battle. The only question there in chapter 12 is, Vayishlach Yoav Malchim al David vayomer nilchamti b'Raba, I fought against Raba, lachadati et ir amayim, I have taken the city of waters, now come and finish the campaign, esof et yeter ha'am, v'chane al ha'ir v'lochta, pen ilkod ani et ha'ir, v'nikra shmi aleh, lest I finish the battle and my name is attached to the city. So now the question is whether the city will be called David's victory or Yoav's victory. Whose victory should it have been called? Go back one chapter. Chazak v'nit chazak b'adameinu b'adarei Elokeinu v'Hashem yaseh atov b'enav. So the whole atmosphere is different, the whole context. The question of the belief in this campaign, what the support for this campaign, the sense of loyalty, the sense of godliness, the sense of hashkacha, the sense of God's will, everything about this campaign is so different than the war in chapter 11, same city, sort of part two, but unfortunately with a very different and a very tragic end. And into this world, David says to Yoav, okay, Yoav, now deal with Uriah. So, just to put in perspective, kind of to give us the background for understanding the atmosphere and the emotions of ultimately how, you know, the context, the comedy of errors. Everything goes wrong one step after another. So we'll talk about David's comedy of errors, if you will, not so comical. For Yoav, also, this is a very different context.
Rabbi, do we know what happened to Avishai?
Yes, I think it's, but it's a later, not here, later. He mentioned again. So that brings me to the next issue, which is, against this backdrop and the comparison between the atmosphere of the campaign in Perek Yud, the campaign in Perek Yud Aleph, and the sort of the very different context of the belief in this campaign and the moral questions involved, against all of that, we come face to face with the question of Yoav's implementation of David's request. David's letter to him included an order to have Uriah killed. And Yoav implements it exactly as David had requested, with maybe some differences in the battle plan or strategy, but ultimately Yoav sees a letter from his commander, from his king, that says, have Uriah killed. Yoav has Uriah killed. And the Gemara raises an interesting question from a halachic perspective, and I think we talked about this a little bit once before, which is, you know, there's this notion of illegal orders. Can a commander, can a general, can a any commander in an army of Israel, are they blindly obligated to follow the commands of the king? Or is there a kind of a law that is higher than that of the command of the king? It's a Gemara in Sanhedrin that talks about the context of it is a comparison between Yoav on the one hand and Avner and Amasa on the other. Remember, I said before that Yoav at some point kills Avner ben Ner, the general of Shaul. And later in the story, in chapter 20, he'll kill Amasa ben Yeter, general of Avshalom. So the Gemara in Sanhedrin, in reference to a pasuk in Malachim Aleph, where Shlomo relates the fact that David instructed Shlomo on his deathbed to have Yoav killed because of Yoav's execution of these two generals, Shepagah b'shnei anashim, Avner and Amasa, who Shlomo describes as tzaddikim v'tovim mimenu, more righteous than Yoav. The Gemara asks the question, in what way were they more righteous than Yoav? The Gemara answers that they, when faced with an illegal command, an illegal order, they refused the command of the king because it was illegal, it was against the Torah. And Yoav did not. Avner and Amasa, what did they do? The Gemara's language here is to expound the phrase ach and rak. I'm not going to get into the details, but it's based on a pasuk in Yoshua. Kol isha she'emret picha b'lo yishma t'varcha l'chol asher titzavel yumat. God says to Yoshua, any person who will violate a command that you give as the king of Israel shall be put to death. That pasuk ends, rak chazak v'yamat, be strong and courageous. Gemara expands it to mean, afilu l'divrei Torah, what if the king gives a command that is against the laws of the Torah? Talmud lomar, rak chazak v'yematz. Rak is a limitation, a miut, and therefore, imba ha-melech levatel divrei Torah en shumin lo. That the king does not have the authority to use his power as the commander, as the general, as the king, to instruct somebody to do something which is inherently against the Torah, which is an illegal order. And therefore, the general has to be able to say, if it goes against the Torah, the king can't ask a general to commit a murder in cold-blooded murder. War is self-defense, but to commit cold-blooded murder, a king doesn't have the authority to ask of a general. The general has to be able to identify the morality of a command and be able to say no. It's a very powerful principle in Jewish law. Avner did exactly that when Shaul asked his generals, his people, to go and execute the city of Nov for having harbored David. Avner refused. And he's praised for it. Whereas Yoav, harag Uriah b'mitzvato shel David, Yoav kills Uriah in the command of David, even though David's command was not a legal one. And so the Gemara clearly states that David's command was illegal and Yoav should have had the wherewithal to say no. And yet he does not. And so on that level alone, there's a question. The question is asked, what is driving Yoav? I would add to this question broader canvas of who Yoav is. Yoav is not somebody who demonstrates total and absolute blind loyalty to David at every step of the way. Meaning, if Yoav was a personality who was a wallflower, somebody who whatever David says, he just did without question. So sure, you could say, okay, you know what? David tells him to do something and he doesn't question it. He never questions it. He just does whatever David says. So in this particular case, it was immoral and was illegal, but nonetheless, he followed. But Yoav, in the context of the story of Yoav, who kills Avner ben Ner, despite his efforts to make peace with David, who kills Amasa ben Yeter, despite his efforts to make peace with David, two generals at different points of his life, who David tries to remove from his position as general and Yoav, and he will reassert himself, who, another story that we haven't addressed yet, which is the story of Avshalom, Avshalom's rebellion, which will come later in the story. Avshalom rebels against David, and in the battle, the great battle of the civil war with Avshalom, David issues an instruction to his soldiers and to his generals. And the instruction is very straightforward. Do not kill Avshalom. He's my son, bring him back alive. They capture Avshalom in a very dramatic way. Yoav goes out of his way to go over to Avshalom when Avshalom was already tied up and unable to explicate himself, and he kills him. And he's told by his generals, by his servant, by his aides. He says, but David commanded us not to harm Avshalom. And Yoav says, I don't care. Avshalom is a rebel. Avshalom is treasonous. Avshalom is the reason we're in this battle. And he kills Avshalom. So here you have an individual whose entire campaign, entire world is dramatically described in Tanakh as one of, on the one hand, the general of David, and on the other hand, not somebody who blindly follows David, whatever he says, but somebody for whom the integrity of the kingdom of the throne of Israel, the integrity of the security of Israel, is such that he will sometimes even act in ways that are morally questionable and against the direct instructions of David. And yet here, David sends him a message. It says, have your, this loyal, devoted general, soldier, who commander in his army, have him killed in a way which is morally offensive. And Yoav goes along with it without question. Not only does he go along with it without question, but there's another element here that I think needs to be recognized. If we asked, we ask ourselves the question with which we started, which is, I'm just going to go back to Perek Yudalef for a second. In the broader canvas of the question, who was responsible for the death of Uriah? The answer is, who is responsible? Who killed Uriah? You tell me. Who killed Uriah?
Can we just answer yes?
Let's work them one at a time. David?
Yeah, David for giving the orders.
Yeah, David certainly had Yoav killed. No question. David is the king. David is the architect of the plan. David is the initiator. And when the Navi comes to David in Perek Yudbet, and he says to him, without question, he says, מדוע בזית את דבר השם לעשות הרע בעיניי, את אוריה החיתי הכית בחרב, you smote אוריה החיתי by the sword, you took his wife את אשתו לקחת לך לאישה, ואותו הרגת בחרב בני עמון, and him you killed at the sword of Ammon. Clearly, and Nathan is talking to David. So clearly David is ultimately responsible for the death of Uriah. On the other hand, Yoav is also guilty. Yoav is the implementer. Yoav is the general. Yoav, the blind follower of David's instructions and sets it all up. So we cannot exempt Yoav from his fate. And in fact, Chazal make it clear that David holds Yoav accountable for this action. So I'll show you that in a moment. Actually, I'll show you that first. On his deathbed, David says to Shlomo, "Gam ata yadata asher asa li Yoav ben Tsruya, asher asa li shnei sarei tzivot Yisrael la'avner b'ner la'masa ben yata v'yahargem, v'yasim d'mei milchama b'shalom." You, Shlomo, David says, you, Shlomo, know what Yoav ben Tsruya did to me, that which he did to the two generals of Israel, Avner ben Ner and Amasa ben Yeter, killed them and paid them back for their peace offerings with blood. And therefore, you should have him killed. So the Mefarshim here pick up from the Medrash the question, what is the dual language? Asher asa li Yoav ben Tsruya, what Yoav ben Tsruya did to me, and asher asa lishnei sarei tzivot Yisrael, and that which he did to the two generals of Israel. So the two generals of Israel is the fact that he killed Avner and then he killed Amasa. Is that an elaboration on the phrase that which Yoav did to me, namely he killed Avner and Amasa? Or is it two different things? Is it asher asa li in the context of something that he did to me, and having killed the two sons of the two generals of Israel? What is it that he did to me besides the fact that he killed the generals of Israel? So that we'll see has something to do with Uriah. We're going to come to it in a second. But clearly, David, there is an element of accountability that rests on Yoav's shoulders. The interesting question that I want to raise here is, how do each David and Yoav respond or react to the challenge of their own actions? Meaning, when Natan comes to him and he says to him, "You killed Uriah, you took his wife, Ata Ish, you are this person, how could you have done it?" David's response was, "Yomer David on Natan, Chatati Lasha. I've sinned. I made a terrible mistake." And he will pay for that mistake and accept the consequences of that mistake for years to come, really till the end of his life. The story of David's life post this chapter 12 and the story of Bathsheba is totally different. What does Yoav do when faced with the question of Uriah's death and whether he will be held somewhat accountable for that campaign, for his death? So that appears at the end of chapter 11. When the battle takes place, and let's go to the end of the paragraph for a second. After he sends Uriah to this campaign against the city of Ammon, and it fails, and Uriah dies, and the people who are with him die, Yoav sends a message back to David. Meishlach Yoav eged leDavid. And he sends the malach, he sends this messenger with the following information. Report back on what happened to the king. And when it's all done, im ta'alech amat ha-malach, if the king gets angry and says to you, "Hey, why did you attack the city? What kind of a strategy is that? Why did you attack the wall? Don't you know that from the wall they can shoot down? Don't you know that you're putting lives at risk?" Then, if the king gets angry at you, then, meaning angry at me and expresses it to you, then here's your answer, Shaliach. You should say to David, "Ve'amarta, Gam avdecha Uriah achiti met." Oh, by the way, in this campaign, your servant Uriah died. What does that mean? What's he saying? He says he's going to tell him the whole battle plan and tell him everything that happened, everything that went wrong. And if the king gets angry, then tell him that Uriah died. The whole point was to tell him that Uriah died. Wasn't that the whole mission? So how come he only tells the shaliach to tell David that Uriah died if David gets angry at the strategy that that Yoav implemented?
Yoav doesn't sound very remorseful about it.
He's certainly not remorseful. He also knows that there's something not kosher here. Right? If Uriah thought this whole thing was perfectly kosher, then he would never have said to the shaliach, tell the king X, Y, and Z, and if the king is angry and he tries to hold me accountable, then say to him, oh, Uriah died, and that'll quiet the whole conversation. He's not going to hold anybody accountable if you tell him that Uriah died. Why? Because
those were his instructions.
Those were instructions, but who knew that they were his instructions?
Only David.
Only Yoav.
Only Yoav, yeah.
So here Chazal says something frightening. That Yoav, I think in the pshat of it, Yoav threatens. I think in the Medrash, Yoav actually does. The moment that accountability comes close to putting blame on his shoulders, Yoav deflects it by throwing it back on David. So the Medrash, the language of the Medrash is the following. Why was Yoav Namanerag? Why was Yoav sentenced to death? Shechein tzivat David Aviv. This is what David commanded. Gam ata yadata tesher asa li Yoav ben Tsruya. What is asa lo? What did Yoav do to him? I get that he killed Avner. What did Yoav do to David? So in the Medrash it says, Atamotze b'sha shekatav David li'av havu et Uriah mupnei melchama chazaka v'shavtem me'acharav v'nikav amet. When David wrote the instructions to have Uriah killed, asaken, he did so, v'ne'rag, and Uriah was killed. Nitkabtzu kol roshei chayalim ha'yoav l'horgo. The people were furious with Yoav, and they came to Yoav, and they threatened to kill Yoav. How could you abandon a soldier like that? How could you abandon one of our own? How could you let Uriah just be killed like that? How could you not show up for the backup? Could you not show up to defend him? Says the Medrash, here alim et haktav, that David, Yoav, in order to deflect accountability from himself, showed them David's letter. And said, oh, this isn't my fault. This is David. You have an issue, take it up with him. Now, again, that's the Medrash's interpretation of it. I think in the pshat of it, I don't know if he actually showed anybody this letter, but I think he threatened to. I think when he says to the shaliach, report to David, and if David gets angry, then say to him, Uriah died in this battle. I think he was subtly threatening David and saying, if you try to lay this blame on me, I've got one on you. Because nobody knows why Uriah died. But do you really want me held accountable here? I'm holding all the pieces of the puzzle. I'm holding the cards. I'm holding the letter. You want me to share it? So faced with accountability, David, Yoav knows that he's done something wrong. Clearly, he knows that this is inappropriate. The way he words this to the shaliach. In the end, the shaliach doesn't get it. So he reframes the whole conversation and he just tells David the whole story as if in an innocent kind of report. But clearly in the tone in which, if the king gets angry, Yoav is clearly indicating that he knows that there's something wrong here, but he's not going to take the blame. He will place that on David's shoulders before he'll take it himself. So, to summarize, and this has all been a lead up to this question. He knows that this command by David to Yoav to have Uriah killed is morally offensive. He clearly knows that it's morally offensive because of the way he frames the report back to David. It's a failed effort because besides Uriah, other people die as well, and he doesn't want to take the blame for all of those deaths. He'd rather lay it on David's shoulders. And it comes back to the question we started with. It's such a different story. In chapter 10, 11, his battle against Ammon, his loyalty to his brother, his loyalty to God, his loyalty to David, all of it is pristine. One chapter later, 1 year later, in a campaign against the same city, David gives him an illegal order to have Uriah killed, and Yoav carries it out. And so the question that we have to struggle with is why? What's driving Uriah? Yoav. What's driving Yoav?
I think Yoav was a little worried that David was going to replace him with Uriah.
Oh, that's very interesting. So that's actually my first suggestion. I have five different possibilities. That's number one. And at the end of the day, we don't have any evidence to any answer to this question. It's all conjecture. In other words, we've reached the point of here we have the evidence, here we know what's going on, we know that there's a question, but we don't have a definitive answer. But we can guess. And certainly there's much to be said for the fact that maybe Yoav knows that Uriah isn't as kosher as, in his eyes, or in David's eyes, as it would seem, that maybe David is planning to replace Yoav with Uriah as a possibility. What evidence would give Yoav that inkling?
Maybe what? Because he sent him, because David asked for Uriah to be sent. Yoav doesn't know what's going on with Bathsheba because he's at the battlefield. So maybe when David asked for Uriah to come, Yoav maybe felt that David was going to be in cahoots somehow with Uriah to try to get him to be
someone. 100%. The fact that David calls Uriah, he doesn't just send a message to Yoav and says, okay, send me a report. Send whoever you want, but send me a report. No, he sends a message to Yoav, send me Uriah. So from Yoav's perspective, David sent a message requesting Uriah to come back to report to him, not Yoav. He mentions him by name, doesn't ask Yoav for whoever is next in line for such a report. And the next thing you know is that Uriah comes back to the field. Now, he doesn't think that Uriah and David are in cahoots together, because the letter states that the letter from David to Yoav is to have Uriah killed. But he is suspicious that Uriah is insubordinate, that Uriah is treasonous, because here whatever cahoot they are in with David initially, by the time Uriah comes back to the field, whatever happened in Yerushalayim, by the time Uriah comes back to the battlefield, David wants him killed. So Yoav is unhappy with Uriah's role and perhaps willing to go along with David's unstated plan, doesn't tell him why, but nonetheless, he is perhaps willing to go along. It's also possible that David has spelled out in this letter a little bit of Uriah's insubordination without the details, right? It's possible that it is more to the line than just says, have Uriah killed. Could be that it says, have Uriah killed because he was insubordinate or treasonous, right? Give it a little bit of an explanation, in which case Yoav would have had a pretense for doing so. That's certainly one possibility, and probably the most likely of the scenarios that I'm going to offer. But there are several other possibilities as well. For example, the context here of David, if you ask the question of why Yoav blindly obeys David in an order that seems to be immoral here, and yet in all his other instances, he does not blindly follow David, but he acts on his own initiative, there is a fundamental difference between David here and David in all the other cases. It's not just Uriah and Yoav, it's also David. Back in chapter 3, when he killed Avner, David was the king of Shevet Yehuda, sitting in Hebron in the midst of a civil war. Back in later on in chapter 20, when Yoav kills Amasa ben Yeter, it's after the rebellion of Avshalom, after David is sent into exile, and after he comes back from exile, weakened and embattled and embittered and broken and struggling with an effort to regain the trust of the people. In other words, if there were ever two of David's weakest moments, leadership-wise, those would be those moments. And Yoav asserts himself, not to threaten David, but to act on his own self moral code, if you will, at moments when David is weaker. This chapter, David has never been stronger. David is sitting at the top of an army of an empire. He's finished. This is after the campaign with Aram in the north. This is David's strongest moment in his military and political career. And so for Yoav to assert himself against David in this context is also problematic. Those are two possibilities. The other possibility, I just throw it out there as a conjecture, is that after the death of the other possibility is that Yoav is a little bit more aware of the story of Bathsheba than we are told, which is complicated. And I've seen it written up, or I've seen it suggested, that Yoav, aware of the shame that the story of Bathsheba would bring upon the family, is helpful to David in covering up the story in order to avoid the publicity of the story of Bathsheba. That's driven by the fact that we cannot forget that Yoav is David's nephew. So that whatever happens, if it's a shame that's brought up on the family, Yoav is part of the same family. And so there might be something to be said for that possibility as well. I'm just not convinced in the pshat of it that Yoav is aware of Bathsheba. There are some who suggest that he is, that it's sort of out there in the public domain, or at least out there in some within the inner circles. And Yoav doesn't want that shame, and so he's willing to go along with David's efforts to cover up the story. It's a third possibility that I've seen discussed amongst the contemporary scholars. Of the three, I'm most inclined to agree with the first, which was, Sherry, what you suggested, which is that Yoav goes along with the effort to have Uriah killed because he sees Uriah as some sort of a threat. He's very uncomfortable with the fact that David called Uriah back from the front. By the time Uriah comes back, David already says, okay, this was an unsuccessful effort to have Uriah killed. But at the end of the day, one thing that Yoav will never do is accept upon his own shoulders accountability for this action. That which David does in two words that will reverberate for the rest of his life, Chatati Lashem, Yoav cannot utter at any point. And ultimately, the story is as much a tragedy about Yoav as it is about Uriah, because, as we said, Chazal clearly link the end of Uriah's life, Asal li Yoav ben Tzruya, asher asal li shnei sarei tzivot Yisrael, meaning that David has Uriah killed, not only because of what he did to Avner and Amasa, but also because of his hand in this story of Yoav, of Uriah, not necessarily because he listened to David and had Uriah killed, but because he refused to accept any level of accountability for having participated in this action. In fact, was willing to place the blame on David's shoulders and threaten David, or in fact, actually did implement revealing the secret of this letter. So either way, that's where the story ends. So I without getting too much in a field, I kind of wanted to share with you a little bit of the background to Yoav and the role that Yoav plays in this story, his accountability, and ultimately his efforts to avoid that accountability, which stand in contrast to David's efforts when David is challenged and David is willing to accept responsibility for his actions, Yoav never is. And that ultimately separates Yoav from David. So that's sort of the conclusion of our discussion of Yoav. Bezrat Hashem, next week we start one of the most, sort of the more difficult piece of this whole story, which is to go back and revisit the various roles that and mistakes that David has implemented, or David has done in this story. David is the last one of the four personalities in this parak that we still have to discuss. So the start of our discussion of David will begin next week, and then we'll move into Natan.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank
you,
Moshe.
Thank you,
America. Appreciate your time and listening.
Thank you.
Yeshua. Good to